I realize our numbers are down. Come on, you guys can do better than that. We got some people who are going to be speaking for the first time here. We need to encourage them, so let's try that one more time. I'm a grateful, enthusiastic member of the Al-Anon Family Groups, and my name is Richard.
Hi, Richard!
That's much better. I am going to... Well, first of all, to let you know what we're doing here. Those of you who have been to the festival before know that what we have normally had at this time slot in the past is a call-up meeting. Problem is that with a call-up meeting, our experience has been that, A, we immediately lose half the crowd, and B, out of the ones that are remaining, about three-quarters of them want to pass when they're called up. So we decided to do something a little bit differently this year. What we have is a series of 10-minute speakers. We're going to talk about our theme, which is living one day at a time. So this is, in fact, a short speaker meeting, and I'm going to call on Pam to come up and read the steps, please.
Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to others and practice these principles in all of our affairs.
Thanks, Pam. I'm going to call on my friend Lloyd to come up and read the 12 traditions, please.
Hi, I'm Lloyd.
Hi, Lloyd!
Al-Anon for Adult Children, 12 traditions. Number one, our common welfare should come first. Personal progress for the greatest number depends upon unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one authority, the loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are with trusted servants who do not govern. Three, the relatives of alcoholics we gather together for mutual aid. They call themselves an Al-Anon family group, provided that as a group they have no other affiliation. The only requirement for membership is that there be a problem with alcoholism in a relative friend. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting another group, or Al-Anon, or AA as a whole. Five, each Al-Anon family group has but one purpose, to help families and alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps of AA ourselves, by encouraging and understanding our alcoholic relatives, and by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics. Six, our family groups ought to ever endorse, finance, or lend our name to any outside enterprise, less problems of money, property, and prestige deter us from our primary spiritual aid. Although a separate entity, we should always cooperate with Alcoholics Anonymous. Seven, every group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Al-Anon 12-step work should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, our groups, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. The Al-Anon family groups have no opinion on outside issues, hence our name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, and TV. We need guard with special care the anonymity of all AA members. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us of these principles about personalities.
Thanks, Lloyd. As I said before, what we've done this evening is we've asked a series of our friends to come up and talk briefly about what it means to them to live one day at a time. The first person I'm going to call up is somebody who has, she entered our lives, my wife and me, about a year ago, I think, and from minute one, she has impressed me with her desire, with her dedication, with her passion for this program, and just her eagerness to make it work in her life. I get to watch her spending time on a regular basis with the lady I get to share my life with, and I can see how good that is for both of them. And she's come to me, whether she knows it or not, quite a bit to me. I'd like to call Lori up to speak first.
Coping mechanisms became the greatest obstacles to me when I tried to live one day at a time. I've heard in the program it's been said that my character defects may very well have been the traits that saved me earlier on in my life, and that became very true for me. I'm an adult child of an alcoholic, as well I'm an abuse survivor. My life was very unpredictable. And after the death of my mom, when I was a very small child, life became terrifying. So, like any good little survivor, I developed these really incredible coping skills. The most powerful skill that I used was to dissociate. I learned to detach, and that's a little different than the detachment we talk about here in the program. I needed to detach from self. It was too unsafe to feel what I was feeling or experience what I was experiencing. I developed many methods in how, you know, I was able to shut down, but my favorite was I counted everything. Counting was numbing for me. It was self-hypnotic. It was repetitious and dull, but it helped me to shut down. As an adult, this was something I just did automatically. I didn't know I was doing it anymore. It was just a part of who I was. So my ability to dissociate came with me into adulthood. I didn't even know this wasn't a normal thing that people don't all do. I'm not seeing anybody shake their head, so nobody out there counts, do they? Yeah. One of the other mechanisms I used was to live from the neck up, and I think we heard that tonight in the meeting on acceptance, how a lot of adult children live from here up, and that was very true for me. I lived in my mind. My mind was a very, very busy place. I could be working on a project today and not really being present in that project. I was already working on tomorrow's project and in my head. And if I didn't have one, I was creating one. I also learned to keep my body very busy. I didn't stop. I didn't slow down. I didn't know how to just be. This is just, you know, again, just another way to stay so busy that I didn't have to feel. As an abuse survivor, I was hypervigilant. I was always looking for danger. I was looking for those that could harm me. So, aim, you know, to the mind. We have to have a plan. We have to have a plan to stay safe, a plan of escape, whatever. And then you have a plan on top of the plan on top of the plan in case plan A and B didn't work, right? So I lived in a constant state of fear, worry, anxiety, and exhaustion. Fast forward to coming to the program many years later, and you guys told me to live one day at a time. And I couldn't quite get it because I was just thinking, you know, I'm barely surviving one day at a time. But as I began to work this program for myself and take the 12 steps and start doing something with them, it was through that process that I became aware of these coping skills, these coping mechanisms that I had developed, and, you know, how they were basically no longer working for me. They were stopping me from my recovery. They were in my way. So I had to learn some new skills.
one of the first things that I did was to set some boundaries in my life. And we all know about the boundary that we set that says, you out there, you know, this is as far as you can come. This is my safe zone, and I'm only going to let you come this far. The bigger boundary for me was the one that said, I have to stay in here, okay, because dissociation was just so huge for me. So I had to create a boundary that kept myself in so that I could feel and start to work my program of recovery. I do this daily, or most days. Anyways, I do it by imagining like an invisible wall that works here for me, and it keeps me inside, and this is my safe space. And as long as I stay contained in this space, I get to think and feel. I invite my higher power into this space with me as well. When I do that, you know, my higher power was always out there. My thoughts were always out there, and so was my higher power. And I could only just, you know, hope that higher power was looking out for me and maybe watching over me. But when I bring my higher power in here, I start to develop a relationship. It becomes someone personal, someone close, someone that I can lean on and rely on. When I stay centered and with myself, I become aware on an hourly, moment, whatever basis of what I'm thinking. And I get to catch the negative, abusive self-talk that I do. Again, something that growing up had become really natural for me. It was just an automatic thing. My self-thoughts were not very nice. So I need to stay grounded. I need to be living sometimes one moment at a time to watch what I'm thinking. And I today choose to change those thoughts. I work on positive affirmations on a daily basis. So I listen to what I'm thinking. I work out, you know, is it an insecurity? Is it a fear? What's going on? And then I come up with, between me and my higher power, I'm not that intelligent, positive affirmations to turn and replace those negative thoughts. Another method that I sometimes use if I'm having trouble grounding is to wrap myself in a blanket. And I think, again, we talked about that in our workshop tonight. That just, it's a self-nurturing. It's a way to stay close to self, to feel, and to be safe. The next thing I do is I invite my higher power into my day. If you had told me when I first came to the program, if you had said that I needed to turn my life and my will over to the care of a higher power forever and ever, amen, I'd have told you to stick it. That just wasn't doable for me. As an adult child and a survivor, I have a lot of trust issues. So that would have been taking things a little bit far for me. But when I break it down into a 24-hour period, I go, you know, and again, self-talk. I tell myself, how bad could it be for 24 hours, you know, I think I can let my higher power take over here just for this 24 hours, and we're going to see how it goes. And if it goes well today, maybe we'll do this again tomorrow. And that's my safe way of building that relationship with my higher power. It's one day at a time. I'm getting a little signal here that I'm not quite aware what it is. 24 hours is manageable. And every day that I do that, I build upon yesterday, and it makes my relationship with my higher power more solid. I believe today that I am given the grace and the wisdom today that I'll need just for today. I won't get tomorrow's grace or wisdom until tomorrow. That helps me let go of the worries about tomorrow, because all I have is the grace to deal with what's going to be in front of me today. So I get to stop worrying about what may or may not happen tomorrow. And when I do that, I also get to watch my higher power take care of situations that may come up tomorrow, because I haven't stuck my hands into it. I haven't tried to force a solution for something that hasn't even happened yet. So I can get a new perspective, and I can ask my higher power to show me a new way to handle things. To sum it up, I basically live one day at a time by talking myself through one day at a time. Things like I can say, just for today. And I think we have a pamphlet that says, just for today, a brochure, whatever. And I tell myself, just for today, I can be gentle with myself. just for today, I can trust that what I'll need to get through today will be supplied for me. Just for today, I can feel and laugh and experience the moment. Just for today, all can be well in my world. Thank you.
Call up is someone who has meant a lot to me since just about the first day I got here. And in particular, the reason I asked him is that somebody who I talk a lot about how when I first got here, there were some special people around here who were talking about experiences that were worse than anything I'd ever gone through. Living in situations that were worse than what I was experiencing, and yet they were okay, and they were serene, and they threw out this like, sense of calm. This is one of those guys. And anybody who knows him knows that over the last couple of years, he's had to live one day at a time. And he just continues, in my view, to do a remarkable job of that. George, would you come up, please?
What's good about doing something like this is it causes me to think about it, to mull it over, to wonder about it, to talk to myself, to think about it. And so that will be the benefit for me of this. I hope there's something beneficial for you. To give you just a quick sketch of history. I came into Al-Anon 14 years ago. My marriage was breaking up. My son was in treatment for alcohol and drug abuse. And I had a younger son that was still living at home. The marriage ended. My son went to treatment, and about a dozen years later, he finally, I think, found sobriety. And in that time, there were many ups and downs, and many, you know, I had a difficult time doing the tough love stuff, and that was really hard for me to do. My youngest son lived with me during I think 3 or 4 years in there, and he had a problem too, and again, the tough love things, and, you know, the one of my hardest things was reporting him to the police and something he was doing and so on. And I, through talking to my sponsor, though, in the program, I knew I had to do that. I couldn't let that go. Four years ago, my youngest son was killed in an accident. And I don't think that I can find anything that's going to hurt me more than that. But, you know, I found a way to keep going. And presently, my present wife is in a care home and has been in palliative care for the past 2 years and has a brain tumor. Now, I tell you that because, like Richard said, I'm still going one day at a time the best way I can. And I'm grateful that I have this program because, you know, it helps me to go one day at a time. And so in thinking about that, I thought, well, how do I do this? How do I keep going one day at a time? Because, you know, it really hadn't occurred to me that that I was doing that, you know. And so I guess I practice the program the best way that I know how. And that's going to meetings and doing readings and talking to Al-Anon people and being around them. I practice gratitude. You know, I can always be grateful that my oldest son has found sobriety. Less than a year after my youngest son died, a grandson was born, and he's been just a delight for me. What a gift. What a wonderful, wonderful gift. He comes to stay with Grandpa every Thursday night, stays overnight with me, and we have a great time. And it's a wonderful thing for me to have that. I have many friends and family that support me. Program friends, outside program friends, and my family. I'm the oldest of five boys, and I have four younger brothers and families that just support me unendingly. I practice detachment. I have to detach from my wife's illness. You know, I was going there every day. I had to be there. I had to support. I had to see if there was something I could do. And I became aware through other people's help that I was getting sick, that I couldn't do that, that I couldn't keep doing that. And through the program, I value myself enough to know that I'm worth not running myself down, which wouldn't have happened before the program. And so I have to detach from that. That doesn't mean I love her. It doesn't mean I don't care. It just means that I have to go and live my life. So, you know, I try to go every other day or every third day or something like that. And I spend some time with her and make sure everything's looked after. And I also have my life to live. And it's interesting that months before she got really sick, she made a very major point of making that she didn't want me to spend my life looking after her, that she wanted me to live my life. And I have to remember that. You know, that was a gift she gave me. Acceptance. I have to accept that my son died. And I will, you know, in this life, I won't see him again. Excuse me. I have to accept that he was drunk when he died. That alcohol took my son. That as hard as I tried, we can't control it. We can't fix it. I have to accept my wife's illness. I can't fix her. I can't make her better. Just as I can't fix the traffic in the city, or the weather, or gas prices, or the economy, or any of those other things that I could let bother me. I can't fix those things. I have a belief that has come to me since I've been in program that life is good. And I was taught that, and the lady was Mickey that taught me that many, many years ago, and was a big influence on the beginning of my program work. And I believe I'm supposed to be here to live life the best way I can and to have as much fun and joy in doing that as I can. That doesn't mean I don't feel a pain. That doesn't mean I don't get down. But that's my belief, and I've learned that in the program. Now, all of this comes, of course, with the help of my higher power. And without a belief and a firm feeling that my higher power is with me, and that my higher power never leaves me. I go off on jaunts, but my higher power never leaves me. I couldn't do the one day at a time. So I believe I only have now, and I try to live my life that way, that I only have now, and therefore now becomes a little longer and then one day at a time. Now, I want you to know that I don't do this perfectly in any way, that I try and I work at it. And I learned a long time ago that it's progress, right? That's what we need, is progress. Thanks for listening.
She had a pretty good knack for picking out alcoholics, so we had an abusive alcoholic for a while after that, and so it was only natural, I guess, that as near as I can see, is that I was attracted to alcoholic people. That's the people that I like, that's who I like to hang around with, and I like drinking too. However, life goes on, and as I get to a point where the drinking wasn't working anymore, it was life was at a pretty deep low, and I don't know, I'd like to think of this as a bit of the way something bigger than me was certainly working in my life. As if I look hard enough or look back, there's several places where things happen that were beyond my control that, pointed me in a better direction. So as I grew up, looking back at the way that I grew up and some of the effects that growing up in alcoholism neglect and whatnot, is that I just didn't like social situations at all. I was real uncomfortable with that. I just felt like weird when I was a kid. Didn't fit in with the rest of the families around me, kind of thing. Accepted by everybody, no problem that way, but I just didn't feel the same. And mostly an only child growing up, I was not exposed to siblings. I do have two older siblings that are quite a bit older than I am, but grew up alone most of the time. So I guess the big thing that were tough for me was weddings. You know, I just couldn't bear to go to them. I hated married people, and I hated going to social things and all that. And the way I dealt with it was drinking and just, running away. Not aware of that at the time, for sure, but I still see the effects of that now. I definitely I mean, the fact that I'm up here is just amazing to me if I look back at it. I mean, I would run from weddings before or run from any social situation, intimate situations, scared silly of those, and still not comfortable in them. And that's what's drawn me to Al-Anon. It's where I sobered up and extinguished, or not extinguished, but dealt with a lot of fears that allowed me to function a lot better in day-to-day life. Got to a point where I was in better shape and able to handle, or so I thought anyways, relationships better, intimate relationships, what I thought were intimate relationships. And have I guess just up to that point still like on a high that, you know, life was going so well. And so about roughly about 10, 12 years ago I was married. I've got two little kids, two little boys, 4 and 7, and it was, you know, just life like I'd never known it. Couldn't get any better most of the time. But there was difficulties in our relationship that were ongoing, and we worked at them as best as we could. So it got to a point where, I mean, it wasn't able to go on any longer. Not by my choice, but by my partner's choice. And that was another pretty deep blow. And you know, even going through all of the pain that was going on at that time, I mean, there was always this somewhere in the back of me that, you know, we'll get through this, you know, I'll get through this. And I didn't exactly know how or anything like that, but where I am here, the first meeting that I guess I was able to really release things was the adult children meeting on Saturdays at 4 o'clock. And as weird as it felt, it was what I needed to do. I just pulled my head off there for the whole meeting, I think it was, and it was okay. I mean, nobody ran away, nobody shamed me, nobody you know, thought less of me or anything like that. And so I had to keep that in mind when I came up to speak here tonight and think, jeez, what's the worst that's going to happen? Well, I don't know, there might be some bored people out in the crowd, and I see all of you now. But other than that, what? I mean, life's going to go on. And as George had mentioned, the same thought went through my mind. I mean, the biggest offer, it's an opportunity for me. I have to think about what I'm going to say when I come up here, and that's always exercise to work on my my recovery. And being a part of this, higher power working for it for me as well. Even though my illness or my mind works overtime on, well, why would he want me to speak up here? I mean, I've only been in here for a short time. I mean, maybe he wants some whole racing to be going on up in my head. But anyhow, getting around to living in the now or living one day at a time. Trying to keep my head out of it is about where I have to put in the most effort. Asking for help in the morning. Going to meetings. I mean, that's a strong desire for me to go to meetings now. The more the better, and I don't have... I've got responsibilities at home that I can't roll the meetings that I'd like to, but identifying, taking time for myself. That one's just not second nature to me, and it's one that I'm still working on, that I really will, like a workaholic or anything else, I'll go as hard as I can, as long as I can, until I'm exhausted, then I don't have to think anymore. But I find that, you know, things work better if I can just find a little pocket of time during the middle of the day and stop and breathe and try and blank my mind. That seems to get me back to a little closer to the earth. And sometimes in that time of meditation, thinking about, I don't know, when I've got issues going on, the slogans, I can reach for those, the literature, the phone. That one's still a difficult one to do, even though, I mean, but it's a lot better than it used to be. I mean, to call somebody and just talk about it, get a sponsor of mine all the time told me just, you got to get the stuff from the inside to the outside, because I was certainly something I could identify with is that I've got to handle everything on my own. I don't want to tell anybody about it for fear of being judged or, you know, seen as stupid. So it's still work to do that, to phone and get out of it. And dealing with fears, boy, you know, when I did a step four way back, the list of fear was just endless, it seemed like. And I did deal with some of those, or became aware of them most certainly, and started working on dealing with those. Some of them just seemed to evaporate, just acknowledging them. But you know, it still seems to go to more depth than what I was aware of then, and I guess that's where I'm at right now, is interested in working the steps, practicing the steps and the traditions, like I've seen some of the members of Alan on that do, the enthusiasm that Richard has, and some others that I see really attracts me here. So I don't know if that's 10 minutes or made any sense or whatever, but gratitude, that's another one that's truly I find the benefits from. If I take the time to do the journaling with that stuff, it just brings my perspective closer to reality of what's going on around me rather than what my head's telling me it is. Anyhow, that's, I guess, all I got to say. I see some people yawning, so I guess it's an indication this time they go. Anyhow, thanks. Despite what the schedule says, our 5x10 got converted to a 4x10, so this is our final speaker for the evening. And a lot of you will remember Karen Kay as our Al-Anon speaker last year, and she just gave a marvelous talk. And some of the stuff that she talked about then spoke to me about the need for living one day at a time. So when I'm looking for people to ask to participate in this, I sat down with Karen and we went through the list of everybody who had registered to that point, and she was right at the top of both of our lists, so we just kind of had to have her here. And with that, I'd like to call Karen Kay up to tell us about her perspective on living one day at a time.
My name is Karen, and I'm an alcoholic, and I'm also a very grateful member of Al-Anon.
Hi, Karen!
You call people like me a double winner, so I have a lot to be grateful for. Thank you, Richard and Karen, for giving me the privilege of sharing my journey to serenity through living one day at a time. If I can find serenity, any one of you can, honestly. I did not grow up in an alcoholic home. There was dysfunction there, but there was no alcoholism. So this was totally alien to me when I was introduced to this. I was introduced to Al-Anon and Alcoholics Anonymous at a very young age, about 21. And before I came to you, I had a heart and head full of lots of dreams and the promise of a bright future. As a side note, I was at a Ukrainian funeral today, 4 hours, and it was long, and I'm tired, so I made notes, otherwise I'd be all over the place. Anyway, I had a good job and life was good. And then I met a very good-looking lead guitar player and we fell in love. I have to tell you some of the history, so some of this will make sense. And after a short stint, go-go dancing and partying, me dancing, him playing, with rock bands like there was no tomorrow, we married and started a family. Why did we think this was going to work? Anyway, when I said I did not grow up in an alcoholic home, I gave this idea a voice at a meeting one day, and someone reminded me, no, you didn't, but your children did. The sense of responsibility I was instilled with as a child in this marriage kicked in, and I quit partying and go-go dancing to go to work and stay at home to care for our children. And my husband continued to party and play without me. He was a binge drinker, and I was left at home alone for days, often without any word from him. Now, this behavior was totally alien. I came from a good home. I was absolutely terrified. And life was very sad and horrible, as I imagined the worst of what could happen. And I might add that all the things I feared happened, and I survived with your help. When Al-Anon found me, I felt hopeless, helpless, lonely, and sad. And I was drawn to you by the laughter that we hear tonight. And I thought, what a crazy bunch. They can't be living with what I'm living with. And I soon found out they were. And some of them were living with far worse. And they were laughing and making fun of their experiences. I remember one gal, her husband liked golfing. He also liked drinking. So she would pawn his golf clubs. She had five children to feed. What are you going to do? She pawned the golf clubs. He'd come home from a drunk. His golf clubs were lost, gone. He didn't dare ask where they went because he figured he'd lost them. Who's going to admit that? And then she'd get them back, and they'd reappear. And they were laughing hysterically about this, and none of it made sense. In any case, another gift of Al-Anon, I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was able to look at my drinking as a teenager, and I knew it definitely wasn't social drinking. So I joined AA. I had 2 years in the program. I sort of hung out with the fellowship. I didn't work the steps, didn't take anything too seriously. Still went to Al-Anon. Thought I worked the program there. I probably, if I'd have stayed in closer, I wouldn't be in the trouble that I got into later. But in any case, someone gave me a bottle of wine for a birthday, and I started drinking after 2 years in the program. And we had been to Hartview, to a treatment center in the States. And at that time, I was also told I was not alcoholic, because had I been, I would have drank through pregnancies and being alone or whatever. And I've learned since that's not true. There's many alcoholic women don't drink through pregnancies. Now, but I put that away for future reference when I was there as an Al-Anon person. And after I divorced my alcoholic, I started drinking again, and within 6 years I was ready to give that up, and I came back to AA. Now, in these meetings I heard people talking about live and let live, let go and let God, and one day at a time. And most of it sounded good to me, but I knew it would never work for me. I could never do that. Life was too painful, and I had lost too much. However, I continued going to meetings, and it worked in spite of me. I found myself letting go of the fear and the dread of what could happen, and I busied myself with whatever was going on right in front of me to do, to the best of my ability. And Eckhart Tolle, in his book, A New Earth, I know this isn't conference-approved literature, however, he states the ego does not live in the present. It lives in the past or the future. And I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous that ego is a deadly enemy to anyone trying to live one day at a time. And I know today that if I go back into the past, other than to share my story, even though there is some success there, I usually end up victimizing myself with guilt and shame. On the other hand, if I forge into the future, I become dissatisfied with what I have today. I complain about my lot in life, and I start to try to control other people, places, things, and it never works. Being right becomes far more important than having serenity, and I make myself miserable. Now, it's taken me a long time in these programs to learn how to live one day at a time, and it hasn't always been easy. Perhaps age has mellowed me. But through prayer, meditation, self-care, and therapy, which is something new I just started this year, I recognize that living one day at a time is what keeps me in tune with my higher power, whom I choose to call God, And here, my life is made simple. I can manage things, and I feel okay. I'm okay. And confident to handle whatever comes my way that day. I also find gratitude for the many blessings in my life. Good friends, many of you are here tonight. My children are happy, healthy, successful. And grandkids, the greatest gift of these programs, I think, my sobriety and my grandkids. I've become aware of other people and their needs. And my own self-seeking, selfishness, and self-centeredness is diminished. And life becomes wonderful again and full of promise. I have recently gone back to taking piano lessons, something I did as a child when I was involved with his alcoholism, my alcoholism. I wasn't playing the piano. And music was a very important part of my life, and I enjoyed it immensely. And I can laugh as a child. I don't have Sister Eleanor banging on my knuckles with her steel-edged ruler. I can make mistakes without getting my ear pulled, and it's fun. And I'm also going back to learning to speak French, because I spoke French as a child. But in the obsession of living with alcoholism and raising children and so on, those things were just put in the closet. So, in conclusion, I'd like to say to anyone new out there that to please be patient with us and yourself as we keep telling you to live one day at a time. Get yourself a sponsor who'll be reminding you, minded daily, and explaining to you how this works in everyday situations. And keep coming to meetings, and you'll hear how this works for other people. And gradually you can apply it in your life. That's how I did it. I watched other people. I wanted what they had. And I listened, which was very hard for me to do. And I was able to get some peace and serenity in my life. And you will find moments of serenity and peace. Thank you for listening, and God bless you in your journey to serenity.
Anybody else here, but this was just marvelous for me, and we just have another round of applause for all of our speakers. But thanks for joining us here this evening, and we'll look forward to seeing you tomorrow morning. We have the eye-opener at 9 o'clock. We have the first workshop at 9:30. We'll close. So in closing, I'd like to say that the opinions expressed here were strictly those of the person who gave them. Take what you liked and leave the rest. The things you heard were spoken in confidence and should be treated as confidential. Keep them within the walls of this room and the confines of your mind. A few special words to those of you who haven't been with us long. Whatever your problems, there are those among us who have had them too. If you try to keep an open mind, you'll find help. You'll come to realize that there's no situation too difficult to be bettered, and no unhappiness to great thing about someone. We aren't perfect. The welcome we give you may not show the warmth we have in our hearts for you. After a while, you'll discover that though you may not like all of us, you'll love us in a very special way, the same way we already love you. Talk to each other, reason things out with someone else, but through no gossip or criticism of one another. Instead, with the understanding, love, and the peace of the program, growing you one day at a time. One final time for today, the serenity prayer, please. God.